Welcome to We Chat Divorce, hosted by Karen Chalou, Legal Liaison, and Catherine Shanahan, CDFA. Each episode, we sit down with divorce professionals and industry experts to provide insights and frank discussions about real people, real situations, and real divorce to help you achieve your best life post-divorce. This episode of We Chat Divorce is brought to you by My Divorce Solution, offering divorce financial planning so clients can secure the divorce settlement they deserve. Visit mydivorcesolution.com to request access. Welcome to We Chat Divorce. Today, Catherine and I welcome back Susan Guthrie, one of our favorites, nationally recognized as one of the top family law and mediation attorneys in the United States. Our episode today is titled, The Divorce Secret No One Talks About, How to Win by Taking a Pause. But before we get started, let's talk a little bit about Susan. Susan has been a leading family law attorney and mediator for more than 32 years with a practice focused on high net worth and high conflict complex cases. With Forrest Woody Mostyn, she founded the Mostyn Guthrie Academy in 2021 to provide gold standard family law collaborative and mediation training for professionals. Her award-winning podcast, Divorce and Beyond, is one of the top 1% of the more than 3.4 million podcasts worldwide. Susan regularly presents at professional events and conferences around the world, and she is a regular media contributor with recent appearances on CNBC, MarketWatch, Forbes, News Nation, Morning in America, NBC Chicago Today, Eye on Chicago, and WGN. Wow, oh wow. She is honored to serve as the chair-elect of the ABA Section of Dispute Resolution and looks forward to leading the section as chair in 24-25. Welcome, Susan.
It's so nice to be back with you ladies. It's always so embarrassing to sit there and listen to that.
I find it to be quite impressive, actually.
Well, thank you. I think a testament to how long I've been in the field. So that's thank
you. I just love you. Forget about all that stuff. I just love talking to you and the information that we bring about. So, and the conversation so easy.
Yeah, and exactly. It's always a delight to be back with you ladies. And I'm excited to have you back on Divorce and Beyond as well in an upcoming episode soon.
Awesome.
Sounds great. So Susan, before we get into our topic today, I'd like to ask you to share a little bit about your story and how you came to be where you are today doing the great work that you do.
And I love sharing this with people because hopefully it helps people to understand why I do what I do today and why I'm so passionate about really getting information out there for people who are going through this process. As you mentioned, I've been in divorce practice for, I think it's up to 33 years now. I think I just passed another one of those anniversaries. And, I didn't go to law school thinking that divorce law was going to be my career for 33 years. And I actually worked on Wall Street for a whopping 9 months when I got out of law school and found that I absolutely hated that. And so, quickly left that practice and just through a series of events, I tried a few different areas of law, tried divorce, supporting people in divorce work, and found sort of my place, found that place where the desire to help, which is why so many people go to law as a practice, but also was able to use my skill set. I found that it was something that I was good at. But I was also a very traditional litigator. I joined a firm that practiced that way, took people to court, argued on my client's behalf, and did a very traditional practice. And then started to notice after a few years that although, court and being a litigator and doing that, drama in the courtroom kind of fed something in me. And we did get good results, but some of those results were tempered by the fact that it was so adversarial for the clients. And so they got a very negative result, even when they got a positive result, because it brought so much stress and financial strain into their lives. But it wasn't until I went through my own divorce, right? So I was a single person when I started being a divorce attorney. Then I got married. Then I got divorced as a divorced attorney. So my first change in life was sort of going through my own divorce and realizing, wow, this is even more stressful than I thought it was. We didn't have kids. We had only been married 6 years. It wasn't a long-term marriage. But that was stressful. So I started to, at that point in time, realize maybe litigation, there might be other things that we can look at, but I couldn't find it. Then I met my current husband, who had just gone through a sort of a more conflictual divorce, who also had young children. And so now I was seeing a stressful divorce, and I was seeing the effects of that divorce on children in my home. And I have to tell you, that was really the turning point for my career. I couldn't keep going the way that I was going and helping families. So I thankfully, thank goodness, found mediation at that point in time and found it to just be a better way to help people restructure their divorces. And from there, my career, you know, has taken a very different path. As you mentioned, I train mediators and lawyers, and I have made it sort of a passion of mine to let people know there are other ways to go through the divorce. And we're kind of going to be talking about some of this as we go today, because I think one of the biggest mistakes for people is, much like I thought there was only one way to get divorced and to be a divorce attorney, there are so many other ways to get divorced. And in many ways, how you choose to get divorced will impact your life and your life post-divorce. So, you know, it was really my own life experiences that made the changes in my career. And I try to bring that experience to the table now when I talk to people.
What a gift.
You know, who would think your own divorce and then my current husband's, his divorce and experience would be a gift. But truly, the day, I remember it really distinctly, the day that the kids were at our house and there was something going on with their parents and the kids were not a part of it, but it was going on in the background. And I could see the look on their faces, the strain it brought to them that their parents were having a conflict. And I'll never forget the look on their faces. I just won't. And I brought back to mind every conversation I'd had with a client over the years who said, "Oh, the kids don't know what's going on. We don't argue in front of them. We're very careful." The you know what, folks? In that moment, I knew how much kids know.
They know more than we imagine. They know. Yeah. That's why people that say I'm staying together because I don't want to ruin my kids growing up. So you're staying together in a very unhealthy relationships and your kids see it all. I talk to a lot of adults who wish their parents got divorced when they were younger.
I just had Fiona Kong on the podcast, who has this wonderful journal she's created for her son to be able to, he was young when they got divorced, only 2 and a half, and he didn't have a lot of communication yet. But she said that, you know, her experience of trying to help her son was a result of what she didn't get as a child. And because her parents stayed together, but she lived in this very conflictual household growing up, and she didn't want her son. She wanted her son to have the benefit of two loving homes, even though they were two separate homes. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was, you know, we hear that so often from people, don't we? Like parents who stayed together and, you know, kids know. And sometimes the gift we can give them is two happy households.
You know, and it's so sad for us. We have, it's not really sad for us. It's sad for us to see. We have a ton of clients who are 55, but 65 and 70 years old. And they're 35 and 45 year marriages. And they all say, "I wish I did this 30 years ago, or I wish I did this 25 years ago." And, you know, life is just a fleeting moment in time, right? So it's sad to have to live like that all those years just because you think the divorce is taboo.
I think it's
because you don't want to go through the litigation process, you know, because they don't know that you could go to mediation and you could do this amicably, which means staying out of court, as we all know. But there are ways to do this in a effective way.
Yeah. Very effective, right? I mean, you can, there are just so many ways if you know, are educated and understand what you're going into and you know, the three of us all know, right? We don't expect people to have this knowledge and understanding of what they're facing. It's one of the reasons why we all do what we do, and we bring, you know, different things to the table. But the help and the support is out there to help you make these decisions as you go through your divorce. And that's what I think is probably one of the most important messages for people to hear if they're in that should I stay or should I go phase, or if they've made the decision but don't really know where to start.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because it really does matter. It does matter how you journey yourself through this process. And, you know, of course, we come from the financial preparation. You know, we don't invest your money for you or anything like that. So we don't have a stake in the game. But it's the financial knowledge and that space to get that knowledge so that you can clearly say, okay, I can go to mediation. It doesn't matter if you have a narcissistic spouse, if you have financial knowledge. You know, what will matter is that you have a mediator that can handle your narcissistic spouse's behavior. And that you are able to go there knowing in the know of your finances so that you have that advocacy, not only for yourself, but from the other professional. And, you know, we always say, don't run and hire an attorney right away in most cases. You know, let's just get your information together and then you could decide which pathway is best for you. And for us, we love anyone going through mediation if they have financial knowledge. There's no reason why you should not be able to go through mediation.
Absolutely.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. So,
okay. End of story. Right. You heard us here on the podcast.
That's it. Awesome.
Thanks so much for joining us today.
The quick and dirty. It does matter how you start.
It's actually one of the most important aspects of divorce. It will plot the rest of your path. And as I said before, your life beyond the divorce, you know, how you choose to go through divorce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Susan, what is the divorce secret you've discovered over your career, and how does taking a pause fit into this?
Well, and it goes to a great deal of what we've just been talking about. And I'm so glad the conversation has unfolded this way, because hopefully this will impress upon people just how important this is, because we know that many people will sit there, we've just been talking about this, will sit for years sort of in that place of, should I stay or should I go? You know, is it time to pull the trigger and get a divorce? Can this marriage be saved? I think statistics say the average back and forth on deciding is about 4 years for people. That's a really long time to sit in one of the divorce limbos. I think of two divorce limbos, right? And the first divorce limbo is, should I stay or should I go? It's a very hard place to live. So that seems to, for many people, put them in a place that when they when they've made the decision, when they've finally gotten there, they feel like a gun has gone off and mm-hmm. the race just started. And they need to get this done. They need to get it started. They need to go run out and Karen, like you said, go hire the attorney and get this going, serve papers. And in fact, I've found that to be probably the worst approach. And that's why I always tell people, the biggest gift you can give to both yourself, your spouse, and your children is to, if you've just made that decision or you've been told the decision has been made, because you usually fall into one of two camps. Rarely is it that the two people sit down for whatever reason and make the decision jointly, although that happens too. But if you're in either of those camps, the biggest and best thing you can do in that moment is now take a pause, take a deep breath, either allow it to sink in and allow your spouse to process what's going on and get a hold of, you know, where they are, if you've just told them, or if you're the one who just told them, give yourself a little space to settle in now, because it's a whole new sort of playing field as you go into this. Do not, it's kind of like Alcoholics Anonymous. I think, don't they tell people, don't make any important decisions in the first year? I'm not saying in the first year of your divorce, don't make any important decisions, but I am saying do not make immediate important decisions. And some of those important decisions are who your team members are going to be.
And I always get frustrated when I hear an assessment call tell us that, you know, their friend said to go hire this pit bull attorney. But what they're not really realizing is you had that, with your example, you had that 4 years to contemplate this and get yourself geared up for it. So if it took you 4 years and then you go and hire this attorney that you're being advised to hire, all they could do for you is file. And then they're going to serve your spouse. So imagine your spouse who didn't have that 4 years to make it seem like a reality gets served these papers with the only language that they could put in there, like you're being sued for divorce or you're being sued for custody.
You are being sued. That's how a summons starts, folks. That's right? What a lawsuit is.
Yeah. So now what's going to happen? It just starts this whole shit show, I want to say, because now it's just all emotions and you're paying your attorneys for all of this, just all this emotions. So yeah, take that pause, you know, and give everyone the space to get prepared and to let it resonate that this is actually happening, because you probably said it 4 times, the divorce word in 4 years, maybe, but nobody believes you're actually going to do it. So now you're actually doing it. So give the other party that time. And that's when we love it, because we call that the honeymoon phase. And for financial people, for us, that's when we can gather this information. Because we're not attorneys, we can say, invite yourself to participate. So the more information we gather, the better chances you are of having minimal usage of your attorney or going to mediation, where you could talk through this process, which is much better for everyone in the end.
Yeah. So Susan, you made a really good statement about the whole pausing and not making immediate decisions. We spend a lot of time in that space with our clients, even in the preparation stage, because they're already negotiating. Well, you know, I think I want this and he or she wants that. And do I need to do this? Do I need to, you know, buy this or change that or shut that my spouse out of this account or that account? All of these questions. And they're asking. So if they're asking, I would bet the people who aren't asking are actually making those decisions.
Doing
those decisions, right? And we just say, not yet. Keep everything status quo until you know the impact. And not only the financial impact, and I'm sure you'll agree here, Susan, it's also the impact of the behavior and the signaling to the other spouse and maybe the spouse's attorney, their friends and whatever. The signal is as impactful as the financial decision itself. Would you agree with me?
Absolutely agree with you. And you've summed it up really well, because this is behavior that we see all the time in divorce. And it makes sense. I'm not going to say to people that this is, you know, coming out of nowhere. Usually when a marriage is at a point where divorce is on the table or happening, we have trust issues at stake, right? Something has happened. There's been a erosion of the communication between the parties. And so I mentioned the limbos, right? The limbo of should I stay or should I go is a difficult one, but it probably an even more difficult one is divorce limbo. And that is that place where you just referenced it, right? Where life is just sort of up in the air and you don't know what it's all going to look like on the other side of the divorce. And people resist that vociferously. Humans hate that kind of limbo. So they want to do what you were just talking about. They want to start making decisions. They want to start doing things. And they don't trust and are not talking very well or communicating well with their spouse. So they run out and they drain bank accounts and they cut off credit cards and they hire the pit bull attorney and do all of those things. But what they don't understand that they're also doing is exactly what you just said, Karen. And I think it's really important that people get this. When you behave aggressively like that, and that's what that is aggressive, you will bring about counter aggression from the other person. We call it a conflict cycle, right? They are not going to just sit usually and allow that behavior or those things to go unchallenged. And perhaps then they're going to then do something to come back, right? And usually people don't come back at the same level. What do? They come back at a little notch. Bit. Yeah. Let's take that up. So it's a conflict cycle. And when you do it within the court system, which many people will start doing when they immediately file the suit and have an aggressive attorney, is it turns into an institutionalized conflict cycle, because now we're going to file nasty motions and send nasty grams between the attorneys. And all that is going to do is raise the level of conflict, make it more adversarial. And we all know what that then does. It raises the cost and it raises the temperature, which then makes it that much harder to settle, that much harder to be reasonable. So it's a huge issue that seems so simple, or seems that you're being protective. You have to weigh protecting yourself. So if you drain that bank account and get $10,000 out of it or whatever that might be, but you just raise the conflict level in your divorce so that you're now going to have motions filed about the fact that you drained that, or it's going to take you an extra 3 months and a bunch of motions to compel to now get the rest of the discovery, you actually probably cost yourself more than you protected.
Mm-hmm. And there are times when you need cash for a variety of reasons. There's just a different way to approach that transaction than draining an account. And I think a lot of people don't realize that because they're getting a lot of chatter from their friends, family, and, well, sometimes, frankly, attorneys. Yep. I just had a client who told me her attorney told her to go take hundreds of thousands of dollars out of an retirement account to pay his bill. So,
well, yeah. I think we see the priority there.
Yeah.
Because we know when you take money out of a retirement account, there are very often financial consequences. Yeah. But yeah, getting your bill paid. And, you know, that's exactly the type of advice. And you're correct. It doesn't just come from the attorneys. It does. Family mm-hmm. and friends, God bless them. They love us. They're supporting us in the best way they know how. But they're speaking from their place of fear and their place of giving you what they think you need. And what, you know, can be one of the hardest conversations to have is to say to family and friends, I really appreciate your, you know, your advice and your protect. I can tell you're trying to protect me, you know, and help me. But what I do not want to do is create this conflict cycle, raise this adversarial approach to this. You know, Bob and I have already spoken, and to the extent that we can, we want to keep this, you used the word earlier, I think, Catherine, amicable, right? We want to do this at least cooperatively or respectfully. Draining a bank account, cutting off a credit card, doing aggressive things is not respectful. It's not cooperative.
But I want to
have that conversation with family.
Yeah. And I want to take the flip side, because I know there's a lot of you listening right now and you're saying, well, wait a minute, I'm not the aggressor, but it's my spouse who just drained an account. And how am I going to protect myself? So I come from the school of thought that if your account had $50,000 in it and your spouse took $20,000, there's nothing wrong with you taking $20,000. That would be an advance to equitable distribution. It's not like you can go run and spend your $20,000 and think that you're going to get another $20,000. So you have to be mindful of what you're doing with it. But you do have to protect yourself in such a way that you could tell your spouse, I noticed you took $20,000, so now I'm taking $20,000. You don't need to run to the legal system to do that. But I do think you should protect yourself in a way. Just don't be the first one to trigger that. So There does take time where I think that you should go take that step to protect yourself, but do it knowing that that's an advanced equitable distribution and you will be accountable to that. So put it into an account and save it for yourself, because it might have to go back, basically.
Yeah. I mean, you're sort of segregating the funds without spending the funds.
Exactly.
And there, you just explained the way to do it though, right? You do that with, hey, I noticed you took $20,000 out. I'm assuming that there was a need for that. Just to be equitable here, I'm going to do the same. Just know that I'm going to put it into a separate account in my name. I have no plans for that money at this time. Or I do have plans for that money at this time. I needed it for my retainer, for my counsel, or, you know, I'm putting it aside because we know the kids' camp is coming up, or whatever those things might be. part of what you're talking about there that goes back to what I was talking about, respectful, is you are doing this with communication, not in a retaliatory fashion.
Exactly.
You ask, you took 20 grand, you just, I'm going to take 30. I'm going to drain the rest of the account because you did it. That's conflict.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know what? The funny thing is, folks, is this can happen and this can work. You know, we have our clients, we have over 90% participation rate of spouses who are participants. They're not actually the client. And they go to really successful mediation because they can, because this communication has started from the get-go of gathering the documentation, getting it organized. We don't need two different people gathering the same information. So when we gather it and organize it and we go through your options that we have to consider, you take that to your mediator and there you go. You have a really successful outcome. And maybe you can co-parent better than you thought you could.
It's so one of the main benefits of mediation, right? Or the cooperative process. It doesn't have to be that you went to mediation. One of the things that I've always loved about My Divorce Solution, what you do with people, because you know it's so important that people understand this, to go to two separate attorneys to do the discovery, it's duplicative, right? It's two very expensive professionals, right? I know what I charged when I was doing it. It's a lot of money to do basically the same thing. And it's not necessarily what, you know, attorneys were put on this planet for. If you looked at my, well, I'd say my checkbook, but nobody writes checks anymore. But if you saw my account,
I do.
My bookkeeper is just despairs of my ever figuring out how to properly track money, right? That's why I have a bookkeeper. But, you know, the ability to work cooperatively, work together, to pull this information together, starts you on this path that we're talking about of working through the issues of your divorce in that same fashion. Because ultimately, the worst case scenario is that all that money, all that time, all of the conflict is going to go in and it's going to benefit the attorneys. And they're the only ones, honestly, who are going to come out on the better side of this thing. Because as that one attorney perhaps told that client, go drain the retirement account to pay $200,000 to me or whatever it was. That's someone's retirement fund that just got drained. It's kids' college funds that end up disappearing. It's the equity in the home that starts to go down. Very few people have so much in savings that they can pay for an adversarial litigated divorce just out of cash. It's going to come from assets most often. And it's coming from both of your assets. So it's the saddest way for people to get divorced. But you're right, Catherine, when you are able to work through any of the issues of your divorce, even if it's just pulling together the financial information, it's one step closer to then being able to talk about what you're going to do because little Jimmy's having trouble in math class, right? It's all part of the same continuum.
Absolutely. I know. I see clients like fight over a document with attorneys or fight over taking the tax credit. And then I think, okay, the credit you would have gotten or the write-off of this or the account that you would have got, you just paid five times the amount to your attorney to fight over that because they didn't know. They just didn't know the impact to it, which is, you know, they had to backtrack with us. But it's sad to see that happening out there so much. You're funding an attorney's child's education where you could be funding your own by coming to an agreement.
Yeah, absolutely. And also knowing what is relevant in the divorce transaction, right? Because I feel like we often spend a lot of time with clients as well, where they say, well, I need to talk to my attorney about, you know, all during our marriage, he spent or she spent money on all of these things and I didn't agree with it. And I don't know where this account went. Well, when did that happen? Well, that happened like 6 years ago. And so they bring this to the table to their attorney. And their attorney has to address it and talk about it and either shut it down or engage a forensic to go back 5 years into credit card statements or, you know, transactions that probably isn't going to be relevant. And so when you do the preparation work, as we're talking about today, and pausing and making sure you know what is relevant and important to your case, then you have better ability to communicate moving forward, because attorneys, you're the client. Attorneys have to respond to you as a client, right? So whatever you're bringing to the table as an issue, it has to be addressed, even if it's not an issue relevant to the actual divorce decree or transaction. Am I correct in that?
You are, right? There's actually, you know, attorneys, we all know, when we get sworn in, one of the things we swear to do is uphold our ethical duties to our clients, right? And many clients don't even know what those ethical duties are, but there's a whole bunch of them. And one of them is to zealously advocate and to be diligent in our representation of our clients. And that has been held to mean that if a client wants a certain course of action to be taken, and we educate them, even, you know, the cost benefit analysis, this, that, or the other, but they still want to pursue that course of litigation, our job is to do that. And all we can do is educate the client so they can make an educated decision about doing that. But here's where the disconnect happens. Very often it is not an intellectual decision. It is an emotional decision, right? They are making it from their place of hurt, anger, fear. Divorce doesn't involve a lot of happy, ha, ha, ha emotions, right? And when someone makes that decision from that place, they're going to go into that, no, I want you to go after, you know, some money that disappeared, or I think disappeared 6 years ago. I want you to do an analysis of the credit card statements from 6 years ago. And I'll be honest with you, most often turns up nothing.
Right.
It really turns, because, and how many times have you all heard that argument you just mentioned, Karen, about, well, I never agreed to their spending money like that. Or I get the one, well, I never agreed, or I told them they should go get a job. Guys, it's water under the bridge. Mm-hmm. And unless they spent the money in a really egregious fashion, like one of the things, if they spent it on an affair partner and went and bought them, I had the case, the mink coat and the Mercedes, that was something we could do something with. But rarely is it something that you can do something with. And rarely is it something that if you look at a cost benefit analysis of going after that information or litigating about it, it's rarely something where you're going to end up plus to that. It happens in certain instances, but you're usually going to find those things when you guys are doing your analysis in the mm-hmm. beginning. That isn't right. The stuff going back 6 years where you find that kind of thing. That is when, you know, you'll find the things in the, your very thorough analysis that you do of pulling together all the financial information. That is another issue. If I could just, you know, add, that is an issue that I also try to get people to focus on. So litigation as a process is very focused on the past. It's very focused on who did what, who paid what, who earned what, who's at fault for this, why I should get more, right? That is just the nature of a litigation process. Mediation, collaborative law, you know, cooperative negotiation, those are all focused forward on putting you into the best possible position in your post-divorce life, the beyond, as I like to call it, right? Mm-hmm. Divorce and beyond being my show. So mm-hmm. just exemplifies one more time that how important your process is. You can spend the year or so of your divorce being totally focused on what happened in your past, or you can be focused on where you're going. And which one do you think gets you to a better place when you walk out of the courtroom door the day the paperwork is finalized, or in a better world, you didn't even have to go to court, but the day you sign your papers? Which one do you think ends up with a better start on your new future?
Yeah. And you can assume that if you're going after that path, you're really going after that path to your own emotional settlement. You need to know, you just need to know, but your gut is usually right. So if you thought your spouse was having an affair all those years, they probably were, but do you really need to spend thousands of dollars to try to track if they spent too much 6 years ago? Because the chances are, financially speaking, I don't see people recoup that, right? But I see that, and they don't recoup attorney fees, because a lot of times attorneys will say, oh yeah, we'll ask for the attorney fees, But how many actually the other side has to pay those attorney fees? Those are the questions you need to know. If I want to go back to my past and I validate to myself that, yes, my spouse has been doing this, you have to say, how much of that money will I ever really get back? That's the question to your attorney. If you're going that route, will you be able to recoup that money for me? Yeah. You know, and probably not is the answer. So I love the fact that you put that into the perspective of the cooperative negotiations, the mediation, the collaborative process is bringing you forward, which is where we all need to go forward to make the rest of your life the best of your life.
Yeah. I mean, wouldn't you like to have that money that you're spending on that entire process to put into the new beautiful beyond that you're creating? You know, I always tell people divorce is not, you know, a tragedy. It's not it's a difficult process, but it is also an opportunity that we don't get very often in adult life, right? We don't very often get put in a place where you get to sort of look at your future and think about what your values are, what lights you up, what you would like to now do, because you're going into a place where maybe some of your priorities are now different, your obligations are different, and you get to make some decisions. And so wouldn't it be nice to have some funds to go into that with, rather than, you know, funding your attorney's, you know, vacation home?
Or having to get a second job just because you need to recoup that money again.
Yeah. Or really, and you're right. You know, most of the time you do not you don't get that money back that you spend on that type of a litigation process. And yes, the court can award attorney's fees, but I'll be honest, in 30 some odd years of practice, rarely do you see the court award every penny that you spent in attorney's fees to compensate you for what was spent. That almost never happens. It's usually some nominal amount toward that, more as a like a wrist slap, I would call it, than truly putting you back where you could have been.
And that's important to know, because the people who are often calling their attorneys every day and searching for funds and changing their mind every day, they're doing it because they're thinking that they don't have to pay that at the end of the day. They're thinking their spouse is going to have to pay that. And guess what? Just like Susan just said, be prepared, because that bill will end up being yours.
Yeah,
we see that way too often. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about other examples of how rushing decisions has created a negative impact on people when they're divorcing and without pausing.
Yeah, well, and probably the number one one, and we've touched on it, but I do want to emphasize it, is the rushing out to hire the attorney first. Mm-hmm. And there's a few things that I just want to point out about that. One is, I don't honestly believe the attorney should be your first hire when you're getting a divorce. And my colleagues sometimes do not love me for saying this, but here I have reasoning behind this. I truly think that you should get a good divorce coach as your first hire. I believe very strongly that those first days of divorce are a place of high emotion more than anything else. The panic that you're feeling, the fear that you're feeling, the anger that you're feeling, all of those things are the emotions that are driving you. You are not in your rational brain. It is very hard to make good decisions then. And that is actually a biological response, right? We know that when we are under stress, you know, divorce is the second only to the death of a child on life stressors, on the list of life stressors, right? So yes, you are under stress in the early days of your divorce. You're always going to be under stress in divorce, but the early days are when it's the worst, usually. And because your brain is emitting all those stress hormones, cortisol and adrenaline, and you're in fight or flight. You'll hear this on, you know, when people are talking about it, literally shuts down the rational part of your brain so that you can't think rationally. So what are you doing? You're making decisions out of those emotions. And that's when you hire the bulldog attorney, because you're afraid or you're angry and they're saying, we're going to nail them to the wall. We're going to get you. We're going to fight for what you deserve, what you're entitled to. And that all sounds really good to your emotional place. It is not usually the right person to handle your divorce. But here's what happens. You hired that person they are now in charge of the legal side of your divorce, and they are going to start your divorce off in that fashion. They're going to do for you what they said they were going to do for you. When you are back into your rational brain a little bit, when you've had, just a chance to settle in after the pause or after time has passed, you are going to find that it is very, very difficult to backtrack from that position. That person is now your attorney of record. They have taken your case to a certain point, and that conflict cycle we talked about earlier has already started and started to ramp up. So now it feels like you got to have that person.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the reasons why a divorce coach is one of the best people to help you manage those emotions, help you learn some tools and skills to just get where you are and get your feet back under you. They are also a good divorce coach is going to know how to help you figure out which process is going to work for you and help you find the other professionals for your team, which will include that divorce attorney. Well, almost everyone needs the advice, the legal advice the divorce attorney brings. But I am a firm believer that you will also need financial professionals in almost every case. I didn't do mediations without financial prof. I just, there's never a divorce simple enough that where I didn't think we needed financial advice and support for clients. You may need a parenting expert or a mental health professional. There's a variety of professionals, and you may need a mediator, which, I count as a good thing. But one of those big mistakes is making that first, decision is I'm just going to go get the divorce attorney. Everything else will fall in place after that. And it's actually backwards.
Yeah, I totally agree with this.
It always reminds me of there was an attorney in a place where I was practicing once, and I was sitting next to them at a luncheon, a bar association luncheon, and I didn't really know anyone. I was new to the area, and so I didn't really know much about their practice. And I mentioned I was a divorce mediator, and he had a funny look on his face, but he handed me a business card, and it was, the name of the firm, and it was a picture of a bunch of boxing gloves, like two people with boxing gloves. And it said, when the rings come off, the gloves go on.
Oh,
and
no.
That was the law firm's motto or tagline. And I knew I was not speaking to a like-minded professional in that moment. That tagline is probably really effective because mm-hmm. when people are scared, hurt, or angry, which many people are at the beginning of their divorce or all of the above, that sounds good.
Yeah. They're passing the power that their spouse had over them right into the hands of a like-minded individual, right?
Yeah.
So I love what you said. And Catherine and I know we both agree with all of that. One of the components that we have here at My Divorce Solution is the legal liaison on everyone's team. And that person is a paralegal, a trained paralegal that has a lot of litigation experience. Because what we found, Susan, is that a lot of people, just like you said, approaching divorce, they have no knowledge of what that is like. And so they go hire an attorney that's recommended by a variety of people. So what we try to help people understand is you probably need to pause and figure out the tenor of your case, because that will determine, A, if you need a mediative attorney, collaborative, or a litigator, because some people do need litigators if their spouse has thrown the gauntlet down. But even more than that, we often find people who have hired attorneys that are their expertise is in, let's just say, child custody or domestic abuse, when they really need someone in high net worth, or they need someone who has a lot of experience in executive compensation or commercial real estate, because they don't understand that family law is such a wide area of practice that no one individual can be an expert in every area. So we also like to use that pause for them to come to a place and get far enough down the road to know, or at least have a really good idea of what is the best type of representation, and then go to a pool of attorneys. to interview.
It's such a wonderful point. I'm so glad that, and that you do that for your clients is such a service and such a support, because you're 100% correct, right? We are, we come from all different backgrounds and we have very different career experiences, right? Like every one of us, I've been doing this for 30 some odd years. And as you mentioned before, the area where I built my practice originally was a high net worth area in this country. It had certain types of executives that worked there. It was a hedge fund mecca because, and we were right outside Manhattan. So I had a lot of highly compensated executives, you know. So those are areas that I perhaps might understand better than a colleague who had a different style of practice, as you said, or who just whose areas of interest and experience might take them into resist, refuse, or alienation cases, or, you know, that sort of, you know, parenting issues. And it really, truly is important to have someone that, from the legal perspective, understands the complexities of your case. And that's not to say that an attorney who is a, you know, I handled high net worth cases, doesn't mean I didn't still think my clients needed the financial professionals. It just meant I understood the legal complexities. Understand there's financial complexities, legal complexities, and those can spill over into psychological. I mean, there's so many components. And that's why a team is really the best approach, so that we all get to stay in our lane. And the most, usually the most expensive professional is the attorney. And so that would be the professional you want to use least. You want them only in their lane. And that's why it's wonderful to have as many other professionals. But you also want a professional or an attorney who is a subject matter expert, as you're talking about, because then they are not spending your money on time to get properly educated on, you know, the issues that your case is bringing to the table. So by getting someone, you may actually pay a little bit more, right, for an attorney who's a specialist in your area, or who's a subject matter expert. That sometimes causes people to raise their fees a little bit. But again, you're going to save it in the time because they know what they're doing.
Right. You're going to get what you pay for.
Yep.
Yeah.
You really do. I always say,
pause.
Divorce is not a place to be penny wise and pound foolish. To use a very old, I think my grandmother said that, right? But she wasn't wrong. You can save a couple of pennies, but you're going to spend a lot of pounds or big dollars by saving that money in many cases.
So let's spend our last minutes on a high note, talking about clients who chose to pause and how that impacted their divorce.
Yeah, usually what you find that when people pause, and it's, I have a wonderful example of this. A woman reached out to me the other day and said, you know, I just had the difficult conversation with my husband that, you know, we're getting a divorce and he is completely resistant, does not want this. And I know he needs time. You know, I listened to your podcast. I know he needs time. And so I want to know, what should I do now? And I said, you know, what you're going to do now is stay calm, continue to repeat. I understand and appreciate that this isn't the path you want to take. And, you know, I'm sorry that we've reached this point, but this is going to be happening. I want to give you the time to process this. Find out what you need to know. If you want to ask questions or talk to me, just let me know. I don't want to make any major decisions right now. I really want to give you a chance to sort of assimilate this. And she reached out after about a month again, and she said, thank you so much for telling me that, because my husband has now sort of come to that place and we're going and interviewing three mediators in the next few weeks. Because he's had that opportunity. But he said to me, if I had done anything in those early days, that he probably would have gone out and hired an attorney and taken that aggressive route. So he was actually appreciative of her understanding, right? She seemed to, he thought it was very helpful that she seemed to understand what he needed in that moment in time, not to be pushed, right? Not to feel like he was forced to defend himself. And now they're able to sit down and have still, you know, let's not be, you know, not truthful here. I'm sure they're difficult conversations, but able to make decisions about how to move forward that they're both involved in. I want people to always understand when you're able to talk from the beginning about how you're going to go through this process, how you're going to choose a mediator or a process, how you're going to collect your financial information and move through this. Every little teeny decision that you can make together sets you up for the next decision that you can make together, which ultimately leads you to that success.
You know, when they come through our process, like I said, we have a 90%, over 90% participation rate from a spouse. And, you know, they always say, my spouse will never participate. They'll never go on to participate. Well, you know, we send a very nice letter of introduction when they get, you know, we're not attorneys. So we're doing the financial piece, tell your spouse that and you'd like them to participate. And if they agree, then we send them a nice intro and we offer them a call just to learn about our process. Our agreement, our plan is not to get them to an agreement. But what we provide is a space to be heard, because everybody wants to be heard. And when it comes to the financial piece, which is what we speak about, everybody has an opinion that that's mine, that I got that as a gift, or I, you know, that's, I was premarital or what have you. And so we get to, or this business, the cash flow is not what my spouse thinks. I want to tell you about the business and how it works. They'll tell us because we're not attorneys, but the information that we gather and the space that we provide allows them to start that communication of understanding. You don't have to agree to it, but we have to gather the information. And then if you're asserting something, we just ask for documents because we're a verified process. We have to verify the documentation. So they're setting themselves up to be able to mediate. So when they go to mediation, they know what's outstanding. They've already talked about things. Nobody's getting blindsided. And the mediator gets to be the good mediator and actually talk through the scenarios with them. So I love just having them. I love our process having that space to be heard. Financially speaking, there's a lot of emotions that have to unravel.
Yeah, it's a wonderful process that you do that. And think about it. If you're creating a document for that other 10%, right, the ones who don't have both sides participating, then it's creating a picture of the finances that is one-sided. You know, it, by its very nature, it just can't help but be that. You can only create from the information that you're given. So what is the other person going to think about it? They're going to think that it's one-sided and it's against them. So they're going to be compelled to go get their own. And you've immediately started the headbutting. And, you know, that concept of we all just want to be heard, that's a basic premise of mediation. And that's what, you know, that's a mediation is a vessel for both sides to be heard. But that just your process of allowing both people to have input into creating a fully rounded document, you've created some level of agreement and cooperation in doing that. You've allowed everybody to have their input into that. And you've created something that now can move forward without being like butting up against each other. No, that's not true. No, that's an argument. You may not be making conclusions. I know you don't do that, right? You're not saying, yes, this is true or that is not true, but you're putting all the information in there. So the mediator can say, oh, I can see you both have sort of a different position or a different thought about the, you know, distribution of this particular asset or the ownership of this particular asset or the characterization of this, you know, whatever we're talking about legally. Beautiful, right? Because it's right. Starting from that cooperative place. I cannot emphasize, you do not have to like each other. You do not have to sing kumbaya, which is what everybody thinks we're standing around some sort of fire on the beach, you know, setting balloons into the air when we do mediation. It is hard work. It is difficult conversations, but it is cooperative and respectful. And you are going to get more for you. Be selfish in this moment. You are going to get more for you. You are going to get a better result for you if you have a cooperative and respectful divorce. And you have at least the control over yourself to be cooperative and respectful.
So true. And in that pause, if your spouse isn't participating, at least you have something that identifies all of the missing documents that he or she will eventually have to provide to, you know, to move forward. Susan, it was such a pleasure having you back on our podcast. How can our listeners find you and learn more about you?
You know, the best place is the podcast, Divorce and Beyond. The website's divorceandbeyondpod.com, and people can reach me through the website. I also have a lot of nice downloadables and some freebies and things on the website landing page for people. One of them is how to talk to your spouse. It's a script for talking to your spouse about mediating, because a lot of people find that a difficult conversation. And then there's the 10 top questions to ask a potential mediator if you're interviewing one. So I've tried to make it as easy as possible for people to find that cooperative path. But it's always a delight talking with you ladies. And, you know, as always, I'm just such a fan of what you do for your clients and what you do to start people off on the right foot, because as we just talked about today, that's really probably the most important time in any divorce.
Thank you for that. I totally agree.
So this concludes our discussion, The Divorce Secret No One Talks About, How to Win by Taking a Pause. Thank you so much, Susan, for a fantastic conversation.
Thank you both.
If you're considering divorce, make sure to protect your wealth with divorce financial planning from My Divorce Solution. Our certified divorce experts will help you untangle your finances and understand your settlement options so you can negotiate your marital assets with confidence. Protect your financial estate with divorce financial planning. Visit mydivorcesolution.com to see if you qualify to work with our financial divorce experts. That's mydivorcesolution.com for expert divorce financial planning. Thanks for joining us on another episode of We Chat Divorce. We hope this episode was informative and supportive on your divorce journey. If you're looking for more support for navigating divorce with confidence and clarity, head over to mydivorcesolution.com for more podcast episodes, divorce events, and resources for your divorce. We'll see you back here for our next episode.